This is the Best in Wealth podcast, a show for successful family stewards who want real answers about wealth and investing so they can feel secure about their family's future. At the Best in Wealth podcast, we think differently about wealth and investing, and you should too. What's going on, everybody? I have missed you guys because I have not done a show now for 2 weeks. Why is that? Well, last week was Thanksgiving. I was sick with a cold, but I was trying my best to get out of bed early one morning and do this show. And my wife normally is the one in the house with the better judgment. And she pointed out the fact that this show is basically a hobby of mine. It's something I've always wanted to do. You know, it serves a purpose too. I do invite my clients and friends and so forth to listen to the show so they can learn a thing or two. And someday I might actually engage in a relationship with somebody and get a client off of the show. That certainly could happen. But for the most part, this is just a dream for me to learn how to do podcasting and online radio and stuff like that. So she said, "What the heck are you doing, dude? No reason to do a show. It's Thanksgiving weekend, but I'm back now." What I was going to say, though, was thank you. Thank you for listening to this show. If you've been a longtime listener, the definition of long time of Best in Wealth is 3 months. But if you've listened to this show before and you're listening again, thank you for coming back. And if you're listening for the first time, appreciate you. What I did want to talk about real quick, though, is before we get started anyway, and the topic of the day is going to be us getting back to the nuts and the bolts, whether you like it or not, because it is for your own good. We're going to talk about value stocks in a little bit, but I want to talk first about the good and I want to talk about the bad. First, the good. If you've listened to this show before, you know that I am a huge Green Bay Packer football fan. And the Packers have not been doing very good as of late. However, last night, the Packers were down about 20 points. People at halftime were probably turning off their TVs. Then in the second half, the Packers came roaring back. But it seemed too little too late because with 30 seconds left to go, the Packers had the ball, but down by 2 points and no timeouts. They managed to get a few yards, and then with zero time left on the clock, there was a penalty. So the Packers got one more play. And at their own 40-yard line, our own Aaron Rodgers escaped the pocket to throw the ball a mile in the air and over 60 yards down the field, only for fellow teammate Richard Rodgers to come down with the football in the end zone for a Packer victory. It was pandemonium at my house, but it was also about 11 o'clock at night, so I unfortunately woke up my wife and kids, so I don't think they were exactly happy about that. But what is a guy to do? It was crazy. That was the good. Now, the bad. About an hour ago, I recorded this whole show, and I thought I did a great, great job. And when I just got done, I went to hit stop on the recorder and noticed that I never hit record in the first place. I never recorded the stinking show. So here I am doing it once more for you. There is good things and bad things that happen in life. And in the last 12 hours, I've had a very good thing and now a very bad thing. But you know, how bad is it? I just have to stand and talk once again. And I love talking, so not a big, big deal. Now let's get to the topic of the day. All right, friends, today we are going to talk about value stocks. And before I even get into this, I need to tell you that I'm only talking about this because family stewards who have some level of education will have a greater chance for success for all they want to achieve financially now and into retirement and the legacy that they want to leave. And most people in the financial industry love to talk over our heads. They love the acronyms. They love to talk about standard deviation and dividend discount model and all that crap. And they think if they sound smart enough, we'll seem stupid enough and we'll need them for our services. That is not what I'm trying to do. I'm going to try and explain the difference between value and growth in easy terms. A few of these terms are going to be big. Some people listening, no big deal. Others who don't really like investing are going to be like, what in the crap is this? However, I will use an easy to explain example at the end to try and bring it all together. But before we even talk about value and growth, we need to take a step back and define what an efficient market looks like. As a family steward, I believe that the markets are efficient. That means that prices, all stock prices, reflect all available information about a company. There are millions of stock market participants every day that try to guess if a certain company is under or overpriced. If you add up all the mutual funds in the world, there is over $10 trillion inside of those funds. And $500 billion of money changes hands every day the stock market is open. And while no one actually knows the true intrinsic value of that company, all of these market forces, i.e. all of this trading going on, is driving the price towards the intrinsic value. And while the price of the stock may not be right, because the markets are efficient, it can be considered fair. Why is this important? Because when you believe in the efficient market, you can turn to other ways to beat the market using the scientific approach to investing. And when you turn your head and you stop paying attention to all of the media, the financial media that are trying to brew up your emotions, and all of these mutual fund managers and all of these participants that think that they're smarter than the collective knowledge of everybody else, when you turn your head towards that, now you can open your eyes to other ways to potentially beat the market. When you look at the research or data set from the CRSP, I talked about this, all available information about the stock markets exists reliably at the Center for Research on Security Prices, located at the University of Chicago. That's what people that are way smarter than I use to research the stock market and what drives stock market returns. And are there ways to take advantage of the market through this research? That's the scientific approach to investing. Now, when you look at this data, though, you cannot bend it or twist the research to fit what you believe. So be cautious. There's people that are out there that say, here's some data, and because of this data, this is how you should invest your money. So in order to seriously consider any research, the research must pass three tests. First, it must be persistent, meaning it must exist for a long period of time and continue to exist. The research must be pervasive, meaning it must spread widely throughout the data group. And it must be robust. It must be strong and healthy and easy to understand, a reason for why it's happening. That's what true researchers do when they research anything. You need to pass these tests. Otherwise, it's what's called data mining, just using some data to fit your idea. And scientific data has found four dimensions of return in the stock market that pass this test, academic research identified these dimensions, which are well documented in markets around the world and across different time periods. The research is persistent, pervasive, and robust, and it has meaning. Now, these four premiums we're going to talk about in different episodes. There's the equity premium, the value premium, which is what we're going to talk about today, the size premium, and the profitability premium. Today, we're talking only about the value premium and how you can potentially capture this premium to add value to your overall portfolio so that you can have a greater chance for success of achieving everything that is important to you, your cornerstones, and build abundance within those cornerstones. So now we need to define some things. Like, what the heck is a value premium, Scott? And it means simply that over the long run, value stocks outperform growth stocks. That's fine. What's a value stock? Okay, I'm going to start getting a little wordy, but then I'm going to bring it back to an example eventually, so stick with me. Value stocks are those that generally have fallen out of favor in the marketplace. They are considered bargain priced compared with its book value, replacement value, or liquidation value. Typically, value stocks are priced much lower than stocks of similar companies in the same industry. This lower price may reflect investor reaction to recent company problems, such as disappointing earnings, negative publicity, legal problems, all of which may raise doubts about the company's long-term prospects. Now, you use a measurement to measure what actually a value stock is. The primary measures used to define growth and value are price-to-earnings ratios, price-to-book ratios, and things like that. Growth stocks usually have a high price-to-book or price-to-earnings, which mean that these stocks are relatively high-priced in comparison with the company's net asset values. In contrast, value stocks have relatively low price-to-earnings and price-to-book earnings. Today, I'm going to just concentrate on the price-to-book ratio, since that's one way to determine. But before I even do that, I want to define a growth and a value company in a different way. A growth company is a company you probably want to work for. Think of companies like Apple, Google, Facebook. These companies are rising companies. I bet if I worked for one of these companies and I went to the break room, I probably would have free lunch, free Coca-Cola Classic, big screen TVs to watch. In addition, I'd probably have an unbelievable benefits package because these companies are doing great. In contrast, a value company is a company that for whatever reason is depressed right now. It is a company that probably has had maybe some bad earnings recently. It's a company where maybe I was getting free lunch and now I'm not anymore because maybe we're doing a reduction in expenses. Maybe this value company is doing a reduction in workforce, cutting 10% of the employees, whatever. A value company is a company I probably don't want to work for, but I really should consider owning. A growth company is a company I do want to work for, but I'm not quite sure I want to own it. So how do I know if a company is a value company or a growth company? And like I said, I'm going to use the price to book ratio, and I'm going to give you the definition, and then I'm going to give you an example. So stick with me, my friends. The price to book ratio is a financial ratio used to compare a company's current market price to its book value. The calculation can be performed in a couple of different ways, but the result comes out the same. The company's market capitalization, and I will define that too, can be divided by the company's total book value from its balance sheet. And a balance sheet is a statement of financial condition or a snapshot of a company's health. If a company needed to liquidate, what would the company be worth? If Coca-Cola needed to liquidate right now, they were going out of business and they needed to sell all their buildings and supplies and patents and recipes for soda and so forth, what could they sell the company for? That is the book value. What is market capitalization then? Market capitalization and market cap is the total market value of the shares outstanding of a publicly traded company. It is equal to the share price times the number of shares outstanding. Now, let's work through an example so we can understand what in the heck I am talking about. All right, this is a completely hypothetical example. Every single number I'm giving you right now is hypothetical, just as an example. Do not use this information to go invest because that would not be in your best interest. This is just a hypothetical example. Let's pretend that there are 1,000 outstanding shares that are traded on the stock market of Coca-Cola. And the share price right now was $100. So to figure out the market cap or market capitalization, all you do is multiply the shares outstanding, which is 1,000, times the share price, which is 100, and we come to $100,000. The book value, like we stated, is what if Coke needed to liquidate? What could they sell all their stuff for? Their patents, their recipes, their buildings. And in this hypothetical example, I'm using $40,000. So now we can figure out what the price to book ratio is. And we take that $100,000, which was our market capitalization, divide it by the book value or liquidation value, and it equals 2.5. I might further say that I consider a company a value stock that has a price to book ratio that's under 1.5. So since in our example, Coke's ratio is 2.5, Coke is a growth stock. Let's take this example further. The price of Coke, we already said, was selling at $100 a share. Now, in future months, new information starts to come out. Things happen. There's a food scare in Europe. There's squabbles with sister bottling companies, and so on and so forth. And the price of Coke falls to $50 a share. So now the book value is still the same. It's still $40,000 because the fundamentals of the company have not changed. They could still liquidate for $40,000. But there's a new market capitalization of Coke. Now we're taking the 1,000 shares and timesing it by 50 because that's the share price, and the new market cap of Coke is now $50,000, which means we have a new price-to-book ratio. We take the $50,000, the new market cap, divide it by the liquidation value, the book value. Now the price-to-book is 1.25. The price-to-book dropped from 2.5 to 1.5. And since I consider, in just this hypothetical example, nothing more, a price to book ratio under 1.5 is a value stock. That means that Coke has dropped from a growth company down to a value company. This, my friends, is how you determine what a value stock is using the price to book ratio. Now, if you're not someone who goes and buys individual stocks, that's why there are mutual funds out there that are considered value funds and mutual funds out there that are considered growth funds, okay? Coke, remember though, still is a super solid company. Coke has great fundamentals and a great future. They have hit a bump in the road for now that may last a month and may last 2 years or more. But it is considered a value or a bargain by some because its liquidation value is very close to its market cap. This, my friends, is Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett is a value investor. He learned his strategy from a guy named Benjamin Graham. Benjamin Graham wrote a book called The Intelligent Investor. So if you want to learn more about Benjamin Graham, he's got a big, thick book called The Intelligent Investor. Benjamin Graham is considered the father of value investing. Now, they're going to consider value something totally different than this example that I gave you. So I'm not saying go run out and buy a bunch of value stocks. I'm just pointing out and illustrating that there might be a reason why you may want to own value in your portfolio. Because what I want to do next is compare value companies as a group to growth companies as a group. And here is where I get back to the value premium. So since 1928 all the way through the end of 2014, if we subtract the average return of value companies, which is all small and large value companies that exist, subtract that by the average return of growth companies, small and large, there is a premium of 5.10%. That is a huge premium over growth stocks. But keep in mind, there is not a guarantee that the future will persist. So there is no guarantee of this premium or any premium at all. But looking at the past, it has passed the test. It's persistent, it's pervasive, it's robust, and it makes sense. It makes sense because value companies are a little bit riskier than growth companies. So you should, because risk and return are related, you should demand a higher return from value stocks because they're a little bit more volatile. It makes sense. However, people who captured this premium need to be patient. And we, as family stewards, are patient investors. We are buy and hold investors. We do not time the market or try and pick individual stocks. And that includes individual value stocks. I'm not suggesting that you go hire an active mutual fund manager that's just looking at value stocks, because they do not believe in the efficient market either. And we do. This value premium does not come year after year after year. There are years that growth beats value. In fact, I want to give you the breakdown right now, and I'm going to give it you different periods of time. The first I want to look at is every 1 year period between 1928 through 2014. How many times, percentage wise, has value beaten growth over all of those years, the 80 plus years? And value has beaten growth over 1 year periods 64% of the time. That's not that persistent. If you look at it, like 64% is higher than average, but maybe you were expecting something a lot higher. And honestly, value has had a tough go the last several years. Growth in recent years has outperformed value. Now, I do want to look at longer periods of time, because we, as family stewards, we look at the stock market as a long-term approach. If somebody comes to me and needs their money in 10 years or less, I will not even advise that they get in the stock market at all. We only have money in the market that can be there for long periods of time. But let's define our time horizon. Some people who come to my office who are 65 years old, they think that their time horizon is up because now they're going to retire. But we need to consider that we have to allow our money to grow even during retirement so that we do not outlive our money. That does not mean that 100% of your portfolio is in the stock market. It just means we start looking at 1 year buckets, 3 year buckets, 5 year buckets, and 10 plus year buckets. And that 10 plus year might be 30% of your portfolio, might be 80% of your portfolio. I don't know, because everybody is different with their risk tolerance, their risk capacity, their goals, their financial situation. everyone is different, but we have long-term horizons, whether we're 20 years old or 65 years old, for that long-term money. Let's get back to these examples. We're looking at all five-year periods from 1928 through 2014. Our odds are getting better because in all five-year periods, value has beaten growth 82% of the time. Let's start looking at 10-year periods. I mean, really, like I said, I don't think people should even be in the stock market if their time horizon is less than 10 years. All 10-year periods we looked at from 1928 through 2014, value has beaten growth 94% of the time. In fact, since 1937, there's only been one period that has beat value, and that was a recent 10-year period, by the way. And the last group I want to look at is 15-year periods. If we look at all 15-year rolling periods since 1914, value has beaten growth 100% of the time. That is pretty amazing. Now, does this, all this research mean that we throw out growth companies out of our portfolio? Absolutely not. It just means that we tilt our portfolio in the direction of value. So more of our portfolio will have a higher percentage in value than we do in growth. Since this premium is not captured year after year, we want to have growth companies in our portfolio. That helps smooth out the whole ride we're on, being in the market in the first place. And when we can smooth out our ride and have less volatility, that enhances returns in the portfolio. We just want to have a weighting that's towards value stocks. Think about ice cube trays. Most of us don't have ice cube trays anymore because we have automatic ice cube tray or ice cube makers. However, when I was young, I filled up the ice cube tray. I'd put it in the freezer, and the next day I'd have ice cubes that I could put in my Coke or whatever, since we're on the topic of Coca-Cola Classic in the first place. Now, if I were to put that ice cube tray that I freshly filled up with water and put it a little bit tilted, a little bit slanted, the next day I'd take the ice cube tray out and some of the ice cubes on one side would be real big and ice cubes on the other side would be real little. Think of your portfolio being that way. The value companies are tilted. Those have more of a percentage in your portfolio. The ice cubes are bigger. We're not throwing out growth. We're just having less of it. The small ice cubes. That, my friends, is the value premium. It's one dimension of higher expected returns. This is why education is important. What does your portfolio look like? Are you capturing the value premium? Are you taking an active approach to try and beat the market? Do you believe in market efficiency? Do you even know how your portfolio is made up? It is important because oftentimes it is the difference between financial success and financial failure. We're going to look at other premiums in future weeks, and in between that, get into some less wordy market kind of talk, because there are so many more things that are important in our lives, and wealth is so much more than just these numbers. If you have questions, I want you to email me, scott@bestinwealth.com, or go to bestinwealth.com and click Ask Scott a Question. Until then, you guys, I want you to have a great, great, great week, and I'll see you on the flip side. Success and Wealth Podcast is hosted by Scott Wellens. Scott Wellens is the principal at Fortress Planning Group. Fortress Planning Group is a registered investment advisory firm regulated by the Securities Act of Wisconsin in accordance and compliance with securities laws and regulations. Fortress Planning Group does not render or offer to render personalized investment or tax advice through the Best in Wealth podcast. The information provided is for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial, tax, investment, or legal advice.